Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Welcome to Criminalia, where it's pirate season. We've been exploring the lives and motivations of some of the most notorious freebooters throughout history. I'm Maria Tremarkey.
And I'm Holly Fry. We have been talking about this since pirate season began. You would not only find male pirates prowling the waters of the Caribbean and coastlines of the colonies during the 1700s. Women were there. They made their mark as well. And we could do our best talking about the potential number of female pirates who sailed through the 80 years that are kind of attributed to the golden age of piracy. Depending on who you talk to, they may have made up a small percent, or they could have been an equal number to male pirates. But if you really get to the nitty-gritty and you want to talk about female pirates who are actually confirmed to be real people and real pirates during that time, the list suddenly gets very, very short. The Venn diagram really kind of concentrates into a tiny spot.
There are four confirmed female pirates from the Golden Age of Piracy. One on that list is really just marginal. Those four women are Anne Bonny and Mary Read, whose names you probably recognize because their legends are fairly famous, as well as Martha Farley and Mary Critchett, whose names you may not.
So you may be asking yourself, why those four? And why are we not including women like Rachel Wall and Ching Shi, who were very successful? It's true, they were real people, they were real pirates, and their legends have become well known. However, they are not on this particular list because they were not active until after the period that's considered to be the golden age of piracy had ended.
Bonny and Read, before and after this list, were so famous, or I mean, I suppose what's more appropriate is infamous. We've often referenced them here too. They appear in countless songs and movies. More than 250 years after their deaths, they are even characters in modern video games, such as 2013's Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. Since we've mentioned it, this is a game that's set across the West Indies and includes other notorious pirates that you'd recognize from this season. Edward Teach, or Thatch, better known as Blackbeard, Calico Jack Rackham, Staid Bonnet, Benjamin Hornigold, and Charles Vane. Both Bonny and Read appear as characters too, alongside their male associates. So this is a bit of a digression, yes, but it is great proof that their legends strongly live on.
So while Bonny and Read had ferocious reputations that are legendary today, Martha Farley, also sometimes known as Mary Farley or even Mary Harvey, came by her confirmation as a real person a little bit differently. In terms of the historical record, we should say.
Yes, right.
In case anyone out there is worried, am I a real person or imaginary?
We can't help you with that today.
Just go to your local municipality and see if you appear in records anywhere. Martha, as far as we know, was not a pirate and did not actually commit any acts of piracy. But we know she existed because a British court charged her with piracy. Technically correct, the best kind of correct. So there is, of course, a story here.
In May of 1727, a small-time pirate named John Vidal set sail off the coast of the Carolinas with two crewmen, Thomas Allen and Edward Coleman. On board the schooner named the Anne and Francis were also the Farley family, Thomas, his wife Martha, and their two children. In some tellings of the story, the Farleys were criminals, and in some versions, their home was in the Caribbean, not the North American colonies. Over the course of the next few days at sea, Vidal and his crew boarded and captured one sloop and raided a wrecked ship off the coast of North Carolina.
But that raid went sideways, and the three men that had been taken prisoner overpowered Vidal and his crew. The local authorities were notified that there were pirates both on and off the coast, and it was the local residents who captured them. Thomas Farley escaped during the raid, and he was not seen again, so he basically left his wife to take the heat.
Martha was arrested. She pleaded that she did not know the men would and were engaging in piracy, including her husband, who, as far as she knew, was not a pirate, except for this one surprising instance, or Maybe there were actually a handful of instances. Part of the Farley's legend is that Thomas once stole a pair of shoes from a sloop's master as a gift for Martha. But there's no word on whether or not she knew their source.
So Martha had joined the sailing party. We don't really know why. No one is certain why. There are two popular explanations for it. It could have been just a very simple reason that she enjoyed sailing with her children and her husband. An alternate version is that Martha testified that her children pleaded with her to set sail with their father to North Carolina, and Martha decided to go too. A court believed one of those stories, as well as testimony of witnesses, and she was acquitted. However, she is officially on record for piracy during the Golden Age, regardless of whether or not she technically ever was one. Technically, on paper, she is.
Right. On paper, it's what counts. So, as we were just saying, she ends up on this list because technically there is court paperwork saying she should be there. As we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, and we're going to reiterate it this time so you don't think we intentionally left anyone out so we could slot Martha in. We're definitely not boycotting women such as Queen Theuda because we've already told their story. We're focusing on an academic list of four confirmed to be real pirates who happened to be female and happened to be from a period of time when piracy was at its peak across the Caribbean, the United Kingdom, the Indian Ocean, North America, and West Africa. Theuda, as our example, didn't command her pirate army during that time at all. Neither did the very real Rachel Wall. There are stories told of female pirates throughout all of these ages, but our list has only four because experts have only been able to confirm these four women were, one, real people, and two, real pirates in the late 17th and early 18th centuries. And that's it. Martha makes this list because of the court records, like we said. It's the only record, and I gotta air quote it, and I'm sure Holly did too, of her piracy.
I feel like this is what our elementary school teachers were talking about when they said things were going to go on our permanent record.
Absolutely.
You may or may not have been in that fight at recess, but I'm putting it on your permanent record.
So you were at that fight at recess.
We are going to take a break for a word from our sponsor. And when we're back, let's talk about how it's hard to prove that a person is real, even when there's record of them existing.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Now, let's meet the fourth pirate on our list, Mary Critchett.
Sometimes, even the most successful and real pirates never really have their story told or a chance to have their stories told in the modern limelight. There is a pretty common reason why.
We mention Bonnie and Reed a lot, and we've been known to reference them, and it's because they were included in multiple legitimate records and writings. It's no surprise that they're on this list. We know things about them. We know real things. We know through court records that they both were to be hanged for piracy, but were not executed because they were both pregnant at the time of their sentencing. And the phrasing at that time was, they pleaded their bellies. That's the kind of discovery that makes it a whole lot easier for scholars to confirm a person existed.
For most pirates, their story isn't put together by their activities and legendary exploits, but rather usually from specific records, such as trial dates and execution dates. And pieces of their legends seem to pop up here and there. This is kind of the nature of having a job where secrecy is a little bit of the necessity of your skill set. You hide things and you probably also embellish others to build your reputation. So that's part of this problem. What we're left with when we have all of this are those myths that we were just talking about, sometimes self-perpetuated, and then the facts, and then the intersection where those two blend together. And even though it's been centuries, as you can see, women pirates are still a very misunderstood bunch of sea dogs.
There isn't one thing that made men and women choose a life of piracy. Pirates, or at least the stories about pirates during the Golden Age, made the career in piracy seem pretty romantic and potentially quite lucrative, both of which were attractive factors for getting on board.
there were not a whole lot of job options at the time, and poverty was widespread, so some people likely chose this career path for economic reasons. While some people turned to piracy for the money, others just wanted to escape terrible situations. With the end of the War of Spanish Succession in 1714, European countries started to scale back their navies, and a lot of legitimate sailors turned to piracy as an alternative. And some women then just followed their husbands. Some people were just looking for adventure, and they heard the siren song of the sea.
Although it might seem that piracy during the Golden Age was associated with chests of gold and, you know, all the treasure that you might think goes along with pirates, it actually impacted and shaped the colonization of the Americas with the transatlantic slave trade and busy trade routes around the world. The Caribbean and the seaboard of North America were very active and very thick with pirates at this time.
Before we go forward, we got to have a quick interjection that's pretty important. For just a little moment here, our conversation is going to include some mild but still there discussion of sexual assault. And we understand that that may not be a topic that some listeners want to deal with. So if you need to, just jump ahead a minute or a minute and a half. We will meet you there. Take care of yourself. We got more piracy on the other side.
It's true that piracy was predominantly a male career path, or it's assumed so, let's say. Traditionally, on many ships, women were not allowed on board, and that's for a few reasons, actually, among which was the belief women would lack the physical stamina and or they would be a distraction to the all-male crew. Mostly, though, it was believed that women were just bad luck, and they were bad luck on board ships, and their presence would incite not only violence, but also violent storms.
There are many, many, many examples of women being exploited by pirates, which historian John Appleby describes as, quote, a growing victimization of women on both land and on sea during the Golden Age. The reality hardly resembled any romanticism many might like to believe. Pirates did often bring women on board, despite the rules, and many of those women were, of course, victimized, whether through sexual assault, which was very common, or some other type of physical violence. Female captives aboard pirate Captain Charles Vane's ship, as another example, were considered by the crew to be, quote, entertainment contrary to the usual practice of pirates, who generally sent them away lest they should occasion contention.
So we're going to take a break for a moment for a word from our sponsor. And when we come back, we'll move on to two other women on our list, Martha Farley and Mary Critchett.
Welcome back to Criminalia. This is a time when women's roles were expanding, but not for all women. So let's talk about why.
While men were away and engaging in piracy or whatever they were engaging in on the high seas, many women took over the responsibilities traditionally thought of as male roles. And that included working as retailers and innkeepers, engaging in trade, and sometimes even owning their own ships. In some places, women who were widowed were allowed to keep their husband's property. These were really huge, big changes for women in the 17th and 18th centuries.
In those new roles, women came into contact with pirates. They would run boarding houses and taverns that often housed and fed them. They bought stolen goods from them, and they also acted as pawnbrokers and gave loans. And this was a time when extending a loan was done only with caution, even to non-pirates.
Some women married pirates thinking they'd marry into a rich lifestyle full of treasure. However, marrying for money often backfired because it wasn't easy for pirates to send money and stolen goods back home. Some women who were desperate turned to domestic work and others to sex work. Some women, regardless of whether or not they were married to a pirate, not pirate, single, relocated to islands in the West Indies to open alehouses and other reputable businesses that would mainly cater to the pirate clientele. There are stories, too, of female proprietors who hid their pirate customers in their establishments when authorities came around to make arrests.
But none of this, though, of course, means that women never went aboard the ships to engage in the piracy themselves. It was customary for women at the time to take a sea voyage on occasion with a guardian or two, and you also would have found some that were traveling as convicts or as indentured servants, and of course, as enslaved women.
It's also believed that some women may have pretended to be pirates during the Golden Age as a way of drawing on some of the rights and privileges and freedoms that were exclusive to men at the time. But those pretenders never actually went to sea or planned to plunder anything at all. But you would also find women who joined a crew or became captain of a crew plundering popular trade routes.
The most prominent time of pirate activity during the Golden Age was the years between 1716 and 1726, exactly when both Anne Bonny and Mary Read were on the seas. They are famous as captains and as the two female crew members aboard Calico Jack Rackham's ship. But despite Bonny and Read, women as members of the crew generally did not sit well with many male pirates among both captains and their crews, and it was never readily adopted into pirate culture. Bringing a woman aboard Bartholomew Roberts, better known as Black Bart's ship, was nothing like Calico Jack's policy. Calico Jack, of course, let people get on there, regardless of their sex or gender. But on Black Bart's ships, it was grounds for either expulsion or death to have a woman aboard.
So we know that Anne Bonny and Mary Read were real and also terrifying pirates. We've talked about how Martha Farley was not actually a real pirate, but was actually a real person. So now we've come to our fourth on the list, the real Mary Critchett. Mary was not engaging at the level of piracy like Bonny or Read, but she was a pirate, and she was definitely more of a pirate than Mary Farley.
In general, you would probably agree that it's a good policy not to house pirates together, as pirates tend to be, listen, I'm not going to judge, but they're not historically represented as the most honest of people, and that often can lead to discord. So, case in point, in 1728, six prisoners were sent from England to Virginia, where they were going to work off their criminal sentences, presumably for piracy, but the reasons why they had specifically been arrested in England are actually unclear. There were five men: George Caves, George Cole, alias Sanders, Edward Edwards, Jeremiah Smith, and Edmund Williams. And there was one woman, and that was Mary Critchett.
Every time Mary Critchett's story is told, it has slightly different details. And not only are the details different, there are two different versions. So we're going to go through both.
So Mary Critchett's life of a piracy goes as such. This is the first story. The six prisoners, while working off their prison sentences in Virginia, hijacked a sloop named the John and Elizabeth, and they sailed it from the Piankatank River into the Chesapeake Bay. In this version of the story, there is no answer as to when or how or who caught Critchett and her five mates navigating the bay, but they were captured. During their trials, it was argued that each had rudimentary maritime skills, and it was unlikely that they could have gotten the John and Elizabeth out of the Chesapeake without incident. The court found each convict guilty of piracy and sentenced each to execution by hanging. This version of the story points out that since the trial is documented but the execution is not, there are some questions that come up as to whether or not Mary was actually hanged.
And here's the second version, which, to note, seems to be the more popular version, regardless of how factual it may or may not be. This time, it's on their voyage from England to Virginia when the six prisoners hijacked their transport ship. They overpowered the ship's two-man crew and locked them in the ship's hold. It's told that Mary sat on the hatch for the remainder of the voyage into the Chesapeake. There is, yes, a variation to the variation of this story. It's this detail. The felons are sometimes said to have released the imprisoned crew because Mary was concerned someone would alert the authorities and they'd be discovered as escaped convicts. This, of course, includes the presumption that the released crew must have agreed to not turn them in, so you can see why that part is a little bit fuzzy. In May of 1729, Mary, along with those five other felons, were discovered, and they were captured in a stolen vessel by Royal Navy Captain Long of the HMS Shoreham. 3 months later, that August, Mary was tried in Williamsburg, Virginia, convicted of piracy and executed the pirate way by hanging. Though the execution part of the story isn't documented, the legal records surrounding her trial confirm that Mary was a real person.
Now, sometimes, and it happens with all scurvy sea dogs, male or female, there just isn't enough evidence recorded or left behind to know for certain that a person was a real part of history or just a fictional composite of several people. There may very well be many more real women who were real pirates during this time. For many, though, there's just no record, and if there is, the accounts are often fairly unreliable. Bonnie, Reed, Farley, and Critchett are not exempt from this problem either, and the stories of their short careers are riddled with myth. Many stories are embellished to make better lore, and all of this leaves us with a lot of unsubstantiated tales of many pirate lives, male or female.
I think with that, we should return to the groggery and you can tell me about your pirate life.
I am too lazy to be a pirate, let me just tell you.
I hear you need quite a lot of physical stamina to get that.
Right? Apparently
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I had an immediate idea for this one and I hemmed and hawed over it because it's not really particularly piratical, except that I wanted to make something that had four ingredients.
Oh, yeah.
So it's called Four Women. And I will also say this. The non-alcoholic version has four ingredients, and then you would add your alcohol. And it's really just a very specific version of an Italian cream soda.
Hmm.
But this is also a good way for anyone who's never made an Italian cream soda. They're so easy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Once you hear this, you'll be like, I could do anything, and you can. And mm-hmm. It's delicious. I went with kind of tropical flavors. Since, you know, a lot of piracy was happening in the Caribbean during mm-hmm. this time, and that seemed right. If you look at recipes for Italian cream soda, there are lots of them that call for specific layering. Like you put in the bubbly part first, mm-hmm. and then you add your syrups and your cream. Put it all together. I don't care what order because I use an immersion blender to make it all real frothy and yummy.
Gotcha.
Because when you just stir it, it tends to separate pretty quickly. Don't panic when that happens. It's natural. That's why you always see them served with a straw because you're supposed to keep stirring as you go. So just know all of that. The Four Women includes throwing 1 ounce of hibiscus syrup, 1 ounce of coconut syrup, 1 ounce of half and half, and anywhere from 6 to 8 ounces of club soda together. And you can just stir it if you want. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I like to use an immersion blender and just make it frothy and beautiful. Some people like to do that layering because they like pouring in the colored syrup over the club soda and then the cream on top of that. And it makes a very striking thing, but to me, it's not as appetizing as other people find it. So that's why I tend to do mine with a blender. To make this alcoholic, I put in 1.5 ounces of black spiced rum. Because
mm-hmm.
I was just like, since we're covering kind of a variety of people, they're all looped together in a piracy thing. I figured this is the time to go into the more stereotypical pirate things. So it's very tropical, very rummy. Again, just stir it in or you can use your immersion blender. This is not a drink you'll want a lot of because they're heavy, right? If you've ever had an Italian cream soda, yeah. They can be
the half and half is heavy.
Yes, and that's like the lighter version. I've seen versions with heavy cream
yeah.
And it's like, whew, you get to the end and you kind of have the sweats. You're
right?
My body's processing a lot of stuff here.
I'd like a small cup, please.
Can I get a water and a light ginger ale just to wash this down?
Right.
But yeah, that's the four women. It is very yummy and very tropical. The good thing is, if you do this, and if you've never done Italian cream soda before and this is your first time, the door is now open. You
oh, yeah.
can mix all kinds of flavors. You can do, I like to do a pumpkin and vanilla one now
this
that
season.
It's autumn.
Yeah.
I, of course, like to make a rose version
of
course, an Italian cream
of course.
Soda.
I was really happy to hear about the hibiscus in this one.
Yeah. Gotta get your florals in.
I'm a big, big hibiscus fan, like a hibiscus tea and in drinks. And I love it.
I love it. A candied hibiscus. Like I will make myself sick. I'm like a guppy. I don't know when to stop. I'll just keep eating it.
Portion out little pieces. Maybe
right.
I only have two today.
It's like, no, ma'am, we cannot serve you any more candied hibiscus.
You're over the limit.
You're cut off. Not from drink. Keep drinking. That's fine. But hibiscus. No more candied hibiscus. I'll give you a preview. There's a good Christmas version of this if you want to put in peppermint syrup and like a white chocolate liqueur. Delicious. You can also like garnish it with candy canes. It's super beautiful.
Yeah.
So that is the four women, which now Maria has gone to space. She's in a whole other place thinking of ideas. If you just saw the look on her face,
Christmas
you would know.
Cocktails, Raymond.
Oh, it's going to happen. We'll do holiday cocktails.
I did. I'm sorry. I did space out for a second there. Well, it's not, I was daydreaming for a moment.
Going to be a delicious time. Delicious times ahead, always. We hope that you have enjoyed this exploration of these four women in history and this four women cocktail. We will see you right back here next week with more piracy. Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.